Let me make some introductions, folks, to our listening and viewing audience. This is Disrupt Ed, hosting and streaming live from NewLab in the Michigan Central Innovation Campus. And today I am joined by Dr. Sasha and Dr. Caesar, both of whom are in the house from Cleveland and the D. Both of them have varied educational credentials up to and including their PhDs in instructional design and technology and in higher education and leadership. And they have both been around the block and back. And so they are battle tested. And we're kind of keeping with this theme of being in the arena, being and mobilizing people who have a high GSD index, what we call people who get shit done. And so I'm so glad to have you guys here today to talk about this. So
glad to be here.
All right.
Similarize of index.
Yes, we have this thing that we started a couple of years ago with that index. Politicians for anybody to really get stuff done. You know, that
digital index, high
series, and all that other stuff means little. You don't do anything about it, right?
No.
Person watching the doing should not be criticizing the doing.
You got that right. That's right.
Well, and this is where I want to start the conversation, because I wanted to introduce the two of you and get into it right away here, because both of you are approaching education from different perspectives with the same, going after the same problem. And that is this notion that we spend a lot of money, we put a lot of efforts in, and we don't have nearly enough to show for it. And so what I want to talk today about is upskilling in the arena, how we are able to recruit more people more inclusively, in other words, underserved Black, Brown, and formerly incarcerated people into the employment pipeline, and then how, once there, do we train and upskill them so that they stay longer and that we address companies have a real need to look at the retention issue
today. And not just in the regular employment pipeline, in a higher level of employment pipeline, you know, because you can get a job at McDonald's, and I'm not against any of that, but you can get low level jobs and have two or three of them. You're in the employment pipeline, right?
Right.
But when we're talking about like here, you know, at the center, which is absolutely beautiful, when you're talking about the things that they're doing in terms of technology and innovation, a lot of folk are left out of that space. You know, and it's because of the educational component of that thing. But they're left out, but there are enough people to put into that space if we prepare them. And that's why I like what you guys are doing. You know, that how do we then take what they're doing and push it down so that when those folk come up to the high school, college, you know, how do we get them into that space so that they can be spiraling upward instead of down?
Yeah. I have a real concern. We were talking about this last night. I really a real concern about how do we get people, how do we lift people up out of the low-skilled class? Because we have a lot of folks with a lot of potential who are getting trapped at a certain level of employment in the pipeline, different places. Now, we do have a lot of corporations and businesses that are committed to growing that talent. Like our largest customer in Canada is one of the largest retailers up there, and they invest significantly in their line-level employees, folks who are on the floor in a retail context, to get certificates and degrees. And that's like huge, right? That's like game-changing for some of those folks. But having access isn't enough. Like, there's the barrier of cost, very real. Love that employers can take care of that. That's what we do all day long, which I love. There's still life, right? People still have life, and they have parents, children to take care of, and they have a million things to manage, like your YouTube bill, which is going up again, by the way. Like, Cole needs more of my money. But to, like, all of these different things interact to make it hurt.
And so my question, Canada is a good example. So when I was going to U of L, I did hope I could step on top of all that. When I was going to U of L, I used to argue with them because they used to say they only had like 2% Blacks or something that were going to their program.
And I used to say to them, I said, okay, so it is what it is. So what are you going to do,
right,
though, in the middle schools and the high schools? What programs are you going to establish so you can increase the percentage? You're saying they're not qualified. Okay, we agree. You know, but what are you doing to bring them along? And so that's a good example with Canada, you know, and I'm not criticizing them, but I'm just saying, what do they do as an organization and other companies? What do they do to prepare those students who are in high school, who are in the workforce development system, you know, who didn't make it, you know, through the high school pipeline?
Right.
So what do you do with them? You know, how do you develop them, you know, so that they can be retained? But number one, to develop their skills, because the rapidity of what's happening with technology, things are going to change immediately. You know, I mean, within 5 years, this 7-year thing that I forgot this guy talked about, technology doubling every 7 years or something.
Right,
I would have.
Right, that's out
the window.
But
and that's why I applaud people that at least you started in that process of upskilling, you know, within the organization. I'm 100% for that. What do we do then? I'm working with Dayton Public Schools, for example, or some other school districts. What do we do for those students who are looking at careers, you know, who are in the process of moving forward? What do we do with them? You know, how do we bring them forward? You know, it's not an easy issue, and I'm not saying that it is, but that's how we extend our pipeline. You know, Teddy Roosevelt's statue.
You know, we keep talking about
it. On his statue, it says, in D.C., it says, The greatest loss up is that we have is human resources.
Yes.
You know, that we that's what we want in the world is our human resources. And that's one of the things, untapped talent.
That's right.
So I stop. Wait.
Right. So.
Oh, okay.
And I never was that intentional to the Cliff Public Schools the way it was at that point. It's, I mean, there were a handful of good schools here at the mm-hmm. The public schools have come a long way in Cleveland from the perspective of Eric Gordon, who was the CEO there for many years. He really put together sort of a portfolio school concept where schools specialize in things and they're smaller and they're more focused. And my kids went to one of those magnet schools for a long time. And there are still challenges. Even in the good schools in some of these large districts or rural districts, right, that don't have access. And we were even talking about like the ability that when you could first do language classes online, or when you're
right.
supposed to, you know, AP classes online. But that was a game changer for some of these rural districts. We're talking about things that have made a difference to smaller populations. So we have not systemically changed any of this. And there's a lot of reasons for that.
But everything's a trial, because that's what we really,
that's right.
How do you bring it to scale? Example in Detroit, for example, 56% of the population in Detroit, adult population, are illiterate. Half of the population in Detroit is illiterate. So when we talk about upskilling in an industry that's moving pretty rapidly, you know, engineering, all this kind of stuff, you're not talking about them. You know, that's why we got to change this model.
What? Cats are gone, but those have been gone for a while. That's
absolutely
gone for a generation, two generations.
Right, where the lock is replaced it.
Now, what's coming in now are big are tech leverage and some new stuff. We haven't got those folks who lost those jobs, whose families lost those jobs. Those have never been replaced, and those people are not prepared to take on these new types of complex, highly specialized skill sets.
And you know what it does for me? Is it's an opportunity. You know, so and the way that Ryan always argue about this is that it's always from the prospect of opportunity. What's the opportunity that exists for us to get into the space?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we have so many brilliant minds. Ryan, I'll let Ryan tell the story one time. I went to a high school. But we have so many brilliant, untapped minds, you know, and they get lost. You know, they end up in prison. You know, by the third... The other statistic that just came out for Detroit, I would talk about this a lot, but and I won't. But is that the third? Was it 15%? Only 15% of the third graders in Detroit can read a grade.
Yeah, it's a 15
versus.
Okay, so let me jump into that, because that isn't a black hole. It kind of leads to the really central question I want to ask you both, and that is, it seems to me, and I'm just speaking as someone who's been in the space my entire career and has the opportunity not to be the expert, but to bring a bunch of experts into the room and talk about it. But I'm absolutely convinced that we need a moon launch moment. We have the technology. We have the knowledge. We have the infrastructure that can scale this, and yet we've not done it. What do we need to do to bring that moon launch moment to bear? I think, just raising my hand to start this conversation, I think one of the places to start is one of the groups that have stepped in to assist and support the upskilling of American workers is corporate America. We've heralded and shepherded the education as a benefit movement over the last 10 years, and it's educated tens of thousands of people. So when you talk about skills wave, you're talking about actually democratizing the upskilling that's available, because so far in the education to benefits arena, we're talking about the big guys who have done a great job. McDonald's, Walmart, Amazon, Target, CVS, Starbucks, they've all stepped up and they've done a great job of making these resources, high quality educational resources, available to their employees. So that's going on, but who's left out? Those people who are working in smaller companies, down market. And so,
such as smaller companies either, but in the service industry.
Yes.
You know, who have the whole 2 and 3 jobs. What's available to them? And we do have a pipeline. We just need to figure out how to work better with workforce development. And almost every city or United Way, you know,
yes.
United Way has a lot of programs. You and I work with them, actually, in a couple cases. So how do you not only feed your pipeline as a company, clearly, you know, and upskill people, but what's that next level? How do you get that next level involved?
So, Dr. Sasha, I want you to jump in here. You're talking about democratizing education in the corporate arena. You're talking about making it possible from a financial perspective for small companies to ante up and to pony up. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I mean, if you can affect small mid-sized businesses, you can absolutely change the country. Absolutely. That is a very frail thing.
So what does that take?
So what we're doing, I mean, in the context of, like, in the context of overall societal change, I think it takes more than one company. Making it easy for smaller businesses and mid-sized businesses to just sign up to use a platform. We're taking all of the friction out of it. So an entirely simple process that a business can go and use a platform free. They can use it entirely free to target training for their employees.
So they don't have to buy a big LMS. They don't have to put a lot of money into their tech infrastructure in order to make this happen. That's a fundamental game changer in my mind, because
these access to education for any number of players, right? Like, we have everything from University of Maryland Wolf campus. We have University of Arkansas. We have Emory. I mean, there's all different kinds of Michigan State. We have all this.
So this is like a SaaS model where you're just going to have people subscribing.
Well, so the business can use the platform for free, but they only have to pay the real cost of the education
at that institution.
Right. And so it makes it takes what we call the friction.
Absolutely.
Friction.
Right.
So that it's easy for them, because a lot of businesses, there is a tax benefit for businesses to
invest. Absolutely.
And like the 5,250 sort of tax credit limit. And, you know, there's the way the tax credit applies to different companies is slightly different. But essentially, that can pay for a lot of education for individuals.
Absolutely.
It is a game changer, but, you know, a lot of businesses don't even know they can do it.
You know, part of it with the bit, because I think that's a great model. The other challenge that I see in businesses and other organizations is that they do this development and training, but they don't go up the ladder. You know, so once you develop these, you know,
prepare for the next level of jobs. You know, you got that position for them as well, right? Because you do this continuous training, you know, and nothing's available for you. So I think businesses have to rethink. No,
I think individuals, just to interrupt you, I think individuals too have to rethink.
No, I totally agree.
It is, you know, we didn't, I mean, I honestly didn't think about, you know, when I got done with college, I was in the job market and I thought about getting ahead on my own and I didn't have access to all the education online that's available now. And I think we learned to extend our knowledge, our experience, our own personal credentials that say, I know how to do this, give it to me, by self-learning, by lifelong learning, by being intellectually curious. And so if someone hypothetically came into the skills way of world and we're working, you know, we're working with Corporation X and they have a small group of people and they all take the first level, you know, you've offered them a first level certificate training program. Now they come back a couple of years later. What's next for them? What follows?
Well, I actually think that a lot of education institutions are talking about these stack credentials.
Yeah.
Try a green thing and then, go do something else and come back and add it. It hasn't really, I don't think it's really become part of what we do as the education community yet. But I do think unlocking that is a really critical part because if you're trying to provide for your family, it is very hard to go down a traditional route, right? So you have to get stop in and stop out. But when you stop back in, you can't be told, oh, but you have to wait in 2 semesters for that course.
Right.
No, I think there's another reason for that is when you have these stackable credentials, I think what we've seen, and we've just got to a certain extent embrace, is that the movement towards skills-based hiring, as enthusiastic, as robust as it is, hasn't really moved the needle. Companies are still using the degree as proxy for skills. And so as long as
it's the alternative.
Right.
And that's changing, by the way.
Yeah,
that's
it is. Changed. But it's slowly, a lot of companies say they embrace it. I check the box.
But it is changing. And I see it. So I work with Jobs for the Future. Now for about 10 years, right? And so we talked then, 10 years ago, you know, about stackable credentials.
Right.
The challenge was that we didn't market it, not just us, but enough people didn't market it to process, you know, that so when kids are in high school and in CTE programs, there's not a lot of talk of marketing around stackable credentials. And then it's the same on the company's part as well, right? They don't push that concept of stackable credentials, you know, and what it can give you. See, the other part of it is what's the end of the road? What do you get? You know, as a consultant, they have all these stackable credentials, right?
It's what, right? Like, that is what has to happen. Unfortunately, in some workforce programs, yes, they'll stack to some sort of industry credential, but nobody will then let you go apply that to a degree. Or if you attest to strict, it depends on what advisor you talk to.
That is so true.
Right.
That is so true.
Bruce, that's not scary.
And you know, the other thing it does is some of them, there's not any conformity to it, right?
Oh,
so you get these credentials, right? And then this company that, you know, does the same thing, say, oh, we don't accept those. Right. You know, so I mean, it's got some conformity.
You know, credentials are starting to mature. You're right. They're starting to mature. I think what we have to do is put a line in the sand, though, and think about credentials in a more serious way and attach them to skills that really matter to us. And I think that's the key point you're making, is that we have to, you know, your question is a really good one. Let's go back to it. You said, what do I get? You know, what am I do at the end of it?
Right.
Well, if we're planning for that with the end in sight, then we've got to answer that question. What do we expect of someone who's gone through a series of educational experiences, maybe a degree, certainly a series of credentials. What we want, it seems to me, at the end of the rainbow is an ROI, and it's not a financial one. It is what I'd call a global one, where the return on investment is X, and X is a more engaged citizen, a better community member, a more active volunteer in the community, and a smarter and more productive employee. And the employee gets a much more enriched life and a much more robust finance.
It's hard to quantify that. So who really has it down pat is the medical industry, right? I mean, it's more captured in that.
It is more concrete.
In the medical industry. I'm not saying I don't disagree with any of the things that you're saying.
It's just absolutely.
But when you have a population who needs to work and eat, you know, you have to figure out something that's more immediate. And I think, you know, this roundtable thing, I think needs to, and I don't know if it's occurring in an industry, you know, where they started talking about these credentials, because we've been talking about the stack of credentials forever.
Right.
Right. But who accepts them? You know, and that's the other thing we have to figure out. Why is the value add? You know, and I think that's going to take some time for, well, I think we have to do it sooner than later. You know, but the other thing I wanted to stick in here is that things are changing so rapidly, you know, in terms of industry, in terms of that you need to work. That's why we need some type of council or some entity that keeps up with us, you know, in an educational institution.
Absolutely.
Talking to each other, you know. I mean, education, they can't keep up with schools of education, can't keep up with what's at, you know.
That's right. Well, I think Sasha said it when we were on a previous episode talking about education and upskilling, and she said there are no experts anymore. You have this amount of knowledge, but because things are moving so fast, you have to rely on the next individual and the one after that, because every one of us is going to have a piece of the puzzle. You know, I think this is a good way to branch off on our large discussion, which is the moon launch moment. We are there. We need to start mobilizing the resources. We need to identify some of the challenges. In closing out this episode, for those who have been listening, Dr. Sasha, Dr. Caesar, these guys are going to be joining us in an ongoing series right here in the D to talk about how we lift this up, this moon launch moment we have in education. So,
well, let me just add on. So I think the moon launch moment is a great concept, but I also think you have to have people, industry, community, partnerships, that keeps track of this, that so that we're not starting from point one every time. You know, that we're learning from these things that we're doing. Because I can envision 10 years from now, it'd be a totally different set of skills that people need. You know, but how do we keep pace with that becomes the issue, right? And so that more people are involved. I think Sasha mentioned it before in terms of the middle class, but more people are involved in this process. And I don't think it's easy, but I think it's doable. It's just like this literacy thing I have. You know, I can't get away from, you know, so that more, how do we bring, it's 100 literacy organizations out there, 100,000 of them, giving away books, doing this, doing that, you know, but none of them are coming together.
So we've got to bring it together. So we're coming up on the holidays. Let's make this part of our holiday wish list. I want each of you to share your holiday wish in terms of education and upskilling that you want to share with our audience. You've been listening to Dr. Caesar and Dr. Sasha talking about upskilling in today's disrupted world and some of the barriers and opportunities that over the next series of months, right here at New Lab, right here in the D, we're going to be talking about with a series of experts. They're going to help us put this together. So I'll go to you first, Caesar. What's on your wish list?
A whole bunch of things.
But remember, Santa Claus has a lot of things to deliver. You only get so many, but go ahead.
But it's the, my one wish list is that people come together as organizations to figure out this literacy crisis that we're creating. If you have third graders who aren't reading, you know, 90% of third graders aren't reading at grade level, and research says that they will not catch up. So they end up 25 years from now, you know, on welfare, the prison system, or working 2 and 3 low-level jobs. It will be hundreds of literacy organizations. It's the same way with industry councils and stuff. How can we come together to have a true impact? I mean, that's my goal.
All right, that's your Christmas wish. All right, we're going to look for your stocking in the next couple of weeks. I mean, fill it to abundance.
Plenty in there with it.
Okay, Dr. Sasha, let's hear from you before we wrap this.
You're saying, no, I actually think, so once when I was working for Southern New Hampshire University, they had, and this had happened actually many times, but at one of the graduations, they actually had a mother son cross the stage at the same time. They had both gotten their online from SNHU. I think that's the thing to unlock some of this is education for families as opposed to individuals. And people see each other.
I think that's very innovative. I think that's a great idea.
You know, things together.
You know,
that could transform families.
Well, you know, I totally endorse that for practical reasons. I mean, we've been talking a lot about my own efforts in the online high school arena. But what we've seen over the last 10 years is a growing number of multi-generational students applying and succeeding. Because if you have your kids in that program and then they say, Mom, you got to do this. You haven't had your high school diploma. You've been complaining for years. We need you to do it too. And we'll help you. What does that do to the family? What does that do to their economic purse? I mean, crazy good stuff.
Well, so, it changes the community.
Yes.
What you just talked about is so crucial because it changes communities. You know, if you change communities, you know, in that positive direction, you're going to change cities. If you change cities, you're going to change counties. If you change counties, you're going to change states. If you change states, you change the country. You know, and that's my goal. You know, I know it's, you know, way up there in the night, but
that's all right.
What you just said is really important.
Yeah, now Christmas isn't here yet. Christmas isn't here yet. I think what we have to do is keep moving this conversation along, but bringing other experts into it by identifying the opportunities and then by saying through this community of people in my, you know, in this disrupted community, we start rallying each other to say, wow, this connects to this, and we can start making exponential changes, not linear changes in the progression. So to our listening and viewing audience out there, listen, you got these two experts here. We're going to mix it up with them. We're down in the D. We're live. We're here on Wednesdays, and we're going to be bringing you more content and more stories about how individuals, seemingly ordinary, are actually doing extraordinary things. And these two are on point doing some really, really exceptional work in the
And it's a pleasure to be an intelligent young lady.
Isn't this fantastic? All right. So we're gonna bookmark this. And I think what we ought to do is come back in January and we can check up on Caesar, see what came up in his stocking, and you can see what came up in your stocking. And I know I've got a big list as well. So we'll find out as we
go.
Well, it's big. I got to tell you, my big list is getting to that moment where everyone recognizes it's not about the classes. It's about the impact. It's about the, do we have a better citizen? Do we have a better employee? Do we have a better person as part of a better family unit? That's the Holy Grail.
And it's this work that can change a family.
Yes.
Huh? You know, in terms of capable. So,
right,
so, totally agree with that.
All right, so you guys are both in this. You're into the distance. We're going to wrap this session, but we're going to keep going, and we're going to keep bringing you guys back because you bring a lot into this conversation. We got a lot of work to do. So for those of you listening, listen, your job is to get disrupted with us. Send us your feedback. Send us your comments and get involved. All right? Be part of the Disrupt Ed community. Thanks for joining us. We will definitely be back with these two brainiacs soon. Take care, my friends. Stay disrupted.